Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where our goal is to make politics more accessible and less intimidating.
The show features an interview with an expert in the political field, walking us through the many cues we have about politics, civics, government, and more.
By providing civic education in the places we are, on our phones, and in the language we speak. And yes, we know, we say like a lot.
It's kind of the point, because politics needed a rebrand. Welcome, welcome back to Girl on the Gov podcast. Happy New Year. It's 2024. Holy shit.
I can't.
I feel like we've been, you know, talking about this year for years, and it's here now, and who knows what it's going to hold for us, you know?
No, literally. I can't remember who I was talking to, but the fact of like what can happen in a year's time is so mind-boggling. Like, even when I was trying to describe, like, okay, like, where was Girl on the Gov, like, a year ago? Like, what were we doing? I can't even fathom, and I can't predict. Like, who knew, like, the beginning of last year, we'd become newsletter girlies. Like, we were starting, we were entering our newsletter era. But, like, there's so many things like that where it's, like, you never know whether it's, like, business-wise or politics-wise or whatever, like, what's going to, like, get thrown our way. And, like, that's one of those things that going into this crazy election year has me on the edge of my seat in good and bad ways. Like, my anxiety has never been higher.
I know. So it's crazy. I feel like there are so many different outcomes that can happen. And honestly, I don't think it's going to be what we think it is. Like, something's going to happen and I don't know what, but I'm obviously hoping for the best. And I think the best
you're the positive one of us
will happen, but I just don't think it's like, no, I'm saying positive about it. I'm just saying, like, I think the actual like journey to this election day, something's going to, there's going to be some type of switch up and I don't know what it is, but we'll just see. I don't know.
That's how I feel too. Especially think about 2020. We didn't like at this time during that cycle, we didn't have the pandemic in full force yet. Like, not, I don't want anything bad to further happen. This world is already a shit show. Like, that's not what I'm suggesting for like the world to happen. But like, just in terms of what huge thing could happen and change the course of a conversation and dynamics of an election.
It's, yeah.
And then think of midterms, like Roe being overturned, even though we all knew that was kind of going to happen.
Yeah.
But still, it still did happen and it still did have like a cause and effect.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's just, it's going to be interesting and we'll be right here with you guys through it all and just breaking it all down. So I'm excited for what's to come. And we also, this episode is 2024 looking and we get to talk to a candidate who's running this year in a very, very huge election. But before we get there, just curious, like what you got up to over our little season break here that we had.
Okay, you should be proud of me because I tried to relax. Like, I really, I tried.
Good for you.
It didn't really work. But, like, the effort was there. So, just know, be proud. I watched the, like, My Life with the Walter Boys or whatever that show is called.
Don't say whatever that show is called. You know what it's called.
No, I always mess it up. You know, I can't ever get the words right. But true. I literally watched it at least 5 times. Like, front to back, back to front. Yeah.
So and Sam gave me this
you can
little,
have an intervention. You can
Sam gave me a little hint today over text what she was up to. And just, she said she watched this show the whole season multiple times. And guys, we've been off for 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
And you managed to not only finish a show, which is like normal, But to watch it multiple times the entire season, I am shocked. I watched one episode of that show, but I am yet to
I'm excited for you to like just like dabble. You might find it too cheesy. Like normally, I think in a normal
I did find it a little cheesy.
It is. It for sure is. But I think that's why, even though that's actually like a little bit outside of my normal watching vibe, I was into it. And it felt like it was like an excuse for me to be off my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that. Because I like knew what it was like, I felt like I was watching some psychologist on TikTok was telling me about how like my anxiety is high because I keep watching something because I know what's going to happen. Like it was like one of those things where it was like, okay, I know it's going to happen. I like what happens. So
you're just like, it's your happy place.
Totally. It's like, oh, my light just went out. That's a bummer. I look so much better with that on, but ran out of battery. What a bummer. Okay. Anyways, now I'm in the dark, y'all. So if you guys aren't watching on YouTube,
your lighting still looks great. Doesn't look any different to me.
Thank you. It's giving shadowy nighttime event. And before it was giving superstar walking on a stage. So, you know, we're just going for different vibes, just like my show taste. So that's what I did.
I caught up on Southern Charm, and I caught up on Winter House.
The Taylor-Olivia dynamic is wild. Where the hell Taylor gets off?
Yeah.
Thinking she's right in any dynamic. Like, I know it's reality TV and they cut things and whatever, but like, I don't think there's a way you could cut that where she's somehow right. I've never been more Team Olivia than humanly possible.
I know. It's crazy. It's a good season. And it's my first season of watching it. And
I didn't know that.
I'm excited.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
I think it's my third, but I actually think I binged the last two during like last Christmas break. Like I think that's when. Mm.
So it's I like that Paige is on it now. So I think because Paige. And then I kind of like wasn't habitually watching it. And then someone told me that it was getting really juicy. And I was like, okay, let me get back in.
Wait, just speaking of juicy and jumping to Winter House, I think that Sam and Corey broke up.
Really?
Because that was like the one thing I saw on IG today. Like, she posted something, was like, new year, fresh start. Like something that's like a classic like breakup type caption. Mm-hmm. Then they still follow each other, obviously. This is what I spent my break doing. For 5 seconds, I was like, okay, putting together viral. I mean, I was already on social media, but I was like trying to like get into deep dives and like rabbit holes. That one,
I honestly kind of hope that they are, because I just had little faith in their relationship from the jump. And I think the Winter House thing really solidified it for me. The way she like cornered him into asking her to be her boyfriend, I was like, come on, girly. Like, and the way she handled the other girls in the house, when the one girl, she was like, imagine if you were in a situationship for 8 months, and the girl was like, I literally wouldn't be. Like, that was that girl. I was like, I would absolutely never be in that position. Like, shit or get off the pot.
I feel like it's also a very good telling point of the age differences. Like, I know that Malia girl is a lot older than she is, and Sam is like very young 20s. So like that difference. Totally. Too, and even her dating Corey, like I just see how like that flows into things.
Bravo gossip.
So much Bravo gossip. And I'm behind on like all of the Real Housewives, so no one texts me about that yet. No surprises. Thank you very much.
I'm not a Real Housewives girly, but nonetheless, what also is good is this episode that we have for you today. Our first of 2024. Crazy. So craziness, but excitement. Would you like to introduce our guest today?
Oh, I am happy. Very happy too. So you guys will be very happy with this guest as well. Although I will say this might be Maddie's, like, what is the term that I'm looking for? Dream come true?
Yeah, there's this little thing called manifestation. We mentioned a few episodes back how there was this candidate running for Senate in West Virginia who is Precious Gem and loves Tyler Childers and is running to fill Joe Manchin's seat. And we were like, how amazing would it be to have this guy on the show? And here he is with us today.
Facts, facts, facts. Literally, I was asking Maddie, what questions should we ask our guest, Zach Shrewsbury, candidate for U.S. Senate West Virginia? And she was like, what's his favorite Tyler Childers song? How much does he love Tyler Childers? I'm going to scale up 1 to 10. Are we fans? Are we getting like autographs? Like it was literally
a surrogate of the campaign.
So anyways, long story short, if you are Tyler Childers listening to this episode and you have yet to endorse Zach Shrewsbury, this might be your moment. This might be your hint. So yeah, there's that. But anyways, this episode, you guys will see, gets into West Virginia politics and also running for the seat that, as Maddie mentioned, was held by Joe Manchin. He's decided to retire. He's been teasing the whole, like, am I going to run for president? Like, am I going to mess things up, like, situation? He totally sounds like that. It's fine. Yeah. So we get into what it's like running for the seat, the West Virginia politics of it all, what the state kind of, you know, looks like demographic-wise and all of that jazz. And obviously, like, what his background's like. That's important to this conversation front and center. So without further ado, here is Zach.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, Zach, welcome to Girl on the Gov, the podcast. We are so excited to have you. One, because you are running for Senate in West Virginia. So much to talk about there. And two, you are a fan of Maddie's favorite person on this earth, which is Tyler Childers. So to start things off, what is your favorite Tyler Childers song?
There's a lot. Hard Time is the one that speaks to me on a very personal level. Like, because I get it, you know, like a lot of stuff he's singing, you know, you wonder how you're going to take care of your family. You wonder where it's going to come from. And the desperation at the end of it is, it's just powerful. So that's one I'm most there. And then obviously probably Feathered Indians is the other one, but everyone loves that one. So I try to be a rebel and like something different. But it's very talented artist, but yeah, Hard Times is my favorite.
Great choice. Love it. Have you seen him live?
What's your fave?
Mine is, I go more on the lovey-dovey side, so Shake the Frost, but also Universal Sound, I think, is one of my favorites.
The first one you said, that's a powerful one. That's a good one.
I love it. Exciting. Well, I'm sure we'll dive back into the Tyler topic at some point.
Absolutely. Well, nonetheless, we did want to obviously talk to you about your run for Senate and getting the backstory to, you know, what inspired you to run? What's made you be like, you know what, like, this is the race I want to get into. And now, you know, what's the story there?
Well, it's a long story. I'm a community organizer in West Virginia, and I've done political activism and across the board. And really through this organizing, going through my home, I just see it's just rampant suffering. People are struggling across the state, everywhere you go, and across party lines, you know, people are, and, you know, you don't have jobs available. The jobs you do have don't pay you enough to live. You have families that literally can't put food on their table. And I've been the guy that's you know, met with Senator Manchin at the time, meeting with different legislators, asking for solutions, asking for problem solving, and they'll pat you on the shoulder and give you some empty rhetoric, and then in the day they vote the way they vote because they've been paid off to do so. And frankly, I just got fed up with it. And I was watching. I knew that I predicted that this would be no one would contest Senator Manchin. So I figured, hell, I will. Someone needs to, and I'm 32. Yeah. I'm young. I feel like I'm 60. but I don't have, you know, the age group that we have around the country right now is very out of touch with what is happening currently. And that, so I'm also trying to broaden this messaging by saying, you know, younger people need to run for office. You know, if I can do this, more people can do it. And that, you know, run locally, run state level. But really what it came down to was I was fed up. I have political experience. I've been a community organizer. I've been across my state and parts of Appalachia asking what people need in their communities. What's affected you? What's going on with your family? What do you need to see done to ensure that you have security in your life? And I don't see any of our politicians doing that. So I threw my hat in the ring. You know, I planned this for a year, very strategically and very quietly, building a team and a network across the state. And when we launched, I don't think people quite expected it to be so organized. So here we are.
Yes. the organization. You know it well. So I love that. You're just like brewing behind the scenes and then big launch. We love it. We love a hard launch. You're also a veteran of the Marine Corps. And so we're curious, like, what type of learnings and just life experience that brings into a role as a potential senator.
So one, discipline, for one thing, discipline. And I'm very hard in my beliefs. And also the Marine Corps allowed me to experience just people a lot. It all comes down to experiencing what people need, what the American people need in government. I don't think we truly don't have that. We do as some representatives. There are some good representatives out there, but the vast majority to me don't actively represent working class people. They don't leave their bubbles. They come from wealthy backgrounds and they can't speak for people here anymore. We've lost that touch. So it's a struggle. But the Marine Corps frankly taught me, you know, a lot about people, how to deal with different personalities, taught me a lot of leadership. I mean, if you can lead a squad of young Marines, you can do almost anything in this world. I don't know if you've experienced them, but good Lord, we're a different bunch. But if you can, it really comes down to just leadership skills, learning about cultures and people, and giving that discipline in your life to keep going. You know, that's it. And I really do rely on what I've learned in the Marine Corps and my organizing. You know, I'm considered rather one of the hardest working people in West Virginia, and I'm also very aggressive in my politics. You know, I don't really mince words. I don't hold back. You know, I don't have time to. Like, if you ask me a question, I don't really have time to give you a very long answer that's giving you no answer at all. I'm rather direct. So,
yeah. Love that. I definitely think being able to, you know, move through different personalities is like the key to politics for sure, because there is really no more diverse group of crazies. So, you know, that's definitely the spot to, you know, test run and fully utilize that skill for sure. And I'm so curious, in terms of sort of that distance between the people and then the representatives, especially in West Virginia, like we've had Joe Manchin and a bunch of other kind of like corrupt figures. And so I'm just curious, like, how that's even happened to the extent that's happened. Like, we see corruption or issues across states and across parties and all of the things, but especially in West Virginia, it seems like such a huge divide that you would think that there would be more movement. And then until you, I don't know where that movement's been. So I'm curious what your perspective is on that.
The movement has had its ups and downs, and it's been alive in many people. What I've been saying is you don't really have, the movement's not aggressive enough, to be frank. The movement needs to be more aggressive. It needs to call out, you know, what needs to call out. Like, I was at a rally last night that a lot of politicians should have been at, in my personal opinion. And if only a couple showed up. And what you need to call them out for. You know, a lot of times the Democratic Party does not do aggressive politics. We play it nice. You know, we don't go into the trenches. We stay above it, so we think. And there in states like West Virginia, the Republicans ruin you here because they're just out there slandering your name left and right. And Democrats think, oh, well, I'm not going to respond to that. No, you need to. You need to throw hands in West Virginia.
100%.
And that's the thing. I mean, you have that. The teachers movement here was one of the biggest movements and one of the most inspiring things we had here in West Virginia. And sadly, the legislature has picked away at those achievements for a while now. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, it needs to be an aggressive movement, and we need to just really stand up. That's why I have a pro-working class message. You know, it crosses party lines. You know, I'm not here just to be a Democrat. I'm here to advocate for working West Virginians and see, you know, what's going on in your community. And I've had a lot of success with that. You know, people, you know, I'll go into the hills and hollers. I'll go all the way to the back and find that guy who's never seen a guy running for office before. And you all might not be shocked, but I mean, it's surprising to a lot of people. Politicians here don't go out. You know, fear, people in West Virginia have been put down for decades. You know, we've had no representation, as you all said. So, you know, the best thing we ever got was Senator Manchin. And I mean, comparatively, we haven't had choices. We've had choices between one corrupt millionaire and then one corrupt millionaire with a cute little dog. And that's what we keep getting. So, and that's one of my main points here, is that this election for West Virginia is very important for this state, because this is probably the last election the state has to really remain relevant. You can, because now Senator Manchin is gone, you can either pick me, the guy who's going to fight for you every day, You can pick me, who's at your doorstep learning what you need in your communities, or you can pick Jim Justice, who's a millionaire coal baron who has never cared about anybody here, and allow West Virginia to fade into oblivion. So you can pick a fighter, or you can pick the guy that's going to put money in his own pockets and will fall into a state that no one ever thinks about. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask too. I mean, you obviously just touched on it, but just like the state of the race and what's going on, and just also kind of getting a snapshot into West Virginia politically, because like we talked about, Joe Manchin has been this Democrat representing West Virginia for a long time. And he identifies as a Democrat, didn't always act like it, but I think it just comes back down to that like representation piece that you've been talking about. But it does seem like potentially the electorate in West Virginia would want somebody that's just more representative versus party lines, given the way that they've voted in the past. So I'm just kind of curious, first, just like the state of the race, what it's looking like, what people are saying, and like what you are feeling from voters so far.
Since Senator Manchin's retired, I've been hit with immense popularity so far. Everywhere I go, people are loving the message. Local committees love the message. It's been crazy. Our fundraising is spectacular. I have a fantastic team, and like I said, I planned this for, it was a very strategically planned race, and we've honed into that. So I mean, ultimately, right now it's going great. We pick up steam every day. I stay busy every day. I sacrifice sleep for this.
Yeah.
But the state of affairs here, West Virginia, like I said, it is a red state. I wouldn't say it's a Republican held state. And why do I say that? Because if you look at the 2016 race with Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, both polled very well here. And if you pull the poll numbers, Bernie Sanders outpolled Trump in many counties. But why is that? Because West Virginians, and I've said this before, been put down for so long. We just seek someone who seems to be genuine, who seems to care about us. And Bernie didn't make the primary, so that left Donald Trump, who came here and fear-mongered his way through. Because you can inspire people through fear or hope. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to give a more hopeful message, like much like Bernie did. But if you can't have hope, people will side with fear. And I think West Virginians really just wanted someone who could throw a brick through D.C., and they chose Donald Trump. And that's the thing. And if you give people here another option of someone who's genuine, of someone who actually understands where they're coming from, like myself, because I am. I live these struggles. You know, I've been in the positions where choosing between rent, groceries, choosing between, you know, paying my car insurance, or, you know, go see my family. It's tough, and most politicians can't say the same. So really, like I said, West Virginians just want someone who's genuine, and really in this whole race, I'm being me. I'm being myself in this race. I'm trying to change up politics a little bit, you know, and it's gone very well so far.
Yeah. Well, it's very exciting to see some movement, some momentum. And I know you're chatting with all of these voters, you're seeing this momentum happening and these conversations evolving. And I'm curious, what are the issues that are top of mind? Like, if there is one issue even that voters are saying, like, can you please do something about this? What would that be?
Man, it's so many to really get one. It would come down to between just job opportunities or handling the addiction crisis here. It really is a tie for that. And so I'll touch on both a little bit. Jobs, for one, aren't plentiful here. People, we cling to a dying industry. And my family is coal miners, but we cling to a dying industry that is not good for the land. It's not, and it doesn't treat miners well at all. You know, I'm a fan of the UMWA. I wish the mines that do exist would be unionized instead of being these corporate led fiends that treat miners like crap. My biggest talking point with that is I want to bring renewable manufacturing jobs to West Virginia. Let's build it in West Virginia. You can repurpose mountaintop removal sites with solar panels, for instance. You can build the factories here and put people to work and allow that justified transition for working class people. You know, a lot of talking points is, oh, well, you're just going to kill coal. No, what I'm trying to do is actually provide to protect miners, give them the first opportunity to get those jobs, allow that transition to happen. It won't be immediate, but we have to at least get the ball rolling that way. And that's been taken very well, talking point. People like to hear that someone has a plan in place for people instead of just closing down mines and then leaving West Virginia with nothing. The other one with the addiction crisis is what the state does now does not work. They throw people in jail, and that's about the only solution they really give. We need to be, for me, I have a very compassionate standpoint on dealing with the addiction crisis here. We need to approach this with a lot more compassion, with harm reduction, and just helping people get into recovery and then helping them find jobs, giving them opportunities. And really, it all stems from that. Is in the current system as it is, throws people in jail, it gives them a record, they get out, they can't find a job, so the cycle repeats. So yeah. I'm very much loudly against that. You know, I've worked with the homeless a lot before in West Virginia, and a lot of people just need a chance. And West Virginia, the current government doesn't give them a chance. So I'm very loud and open about, you know, we need to be way more accepting of people and treat people with compassion instead of just a rule book that continues the cyclic pattern of doom.
Yeah. And I'm curious in terms of the addiction crisis there. And this is actually an issue that we've wanted to get into previously, just like haven't had the moment to yet. And curious, like from your perspective, working with people dealing with this, like why has it gotten so bad? Like what has been the catalyst? Like what do you think too would help, you know, pull some pressure off of everything?
Well, I mean, the catalyst was the pharmaceutical companies dumped their pills here and it just went rampant. And I'm not the most educated person on that one. I'm glad I'll put you in touch with the organizers that actually doing the hard work here. I know quite a few that are in the recovery scene and do this. I mostly help them, but like I say, there's nothing here for people. People are desperate for anything. And one of my friends told me last year, you know, no one starts out using drugs and says, man, I can't wait to ruin my life. You know, no one thinks that, but that's how people are treated. And that's ultimately is, you know, we need to quit having such cold hearts to people and actively start encouraging, like I said, just encourage people into recovery, you know, keep people safe, you know, engage in harm reduction, quit being so afraid of helping people. I mean, West Virginia, we're still trying to break. I'd try to break the stigma off Narcan. A lot of people are afraid of Narcan. And I'm like, why? It's saving lives. It's saving people. Why are we so afraid of it? So, but it's really just, it's these long, hard discussions that need to happen across the state. And that's what my campaign also tries to do, is amplify these causes, amplify what's happening here. And like I said, I'll gladly put you all in touch with one of the organizers I know that does this work. She's fantastic. So like I said, that's one of the reasons I would love to, I network everybody I know. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And what's awesome too, I think about that and potentially having you as a senator in the U.S. Senate is like that the issue of addiction has spread across the country and it's really just taken over in a lot of states. And I think we need a leader on the federal level who's going to actually, you know, implement real solutions and bring that compassionate angle to solving this issue. Because, yeah, it's really everywhere. But curious too to talk a little bit more about Joe Manchin and just kind of his tenure and how you also mentioned in your organizing you did have some meetings with him and talk to him about the issues facing people of West Virginia. So I'm just kind of curious, like while he was in office, even before you decided to run, like your thoughts on him and you know his representation.
Senator Manchin, well, Senator Manchin's been Senator Manchin the whole time. Just the rest of the country found out who he was in 2021 because he became important. And the rest of us here in West Virginia were very much like, I don't know why y'all are shocked by this. but Senator Manchin, when I met with him, it really depended on the day. He was receptive. He was very receptive in some meetings. In other meetings, very closed off. I worked for a veterans organization, and we brought veterans in to meet with him the first time, and we started talking about, you know, our problems. And he basically said, you know, he didn't interrupt, but he waited. He's like, how many of you are actually from West Virginia? And of course, like 95% of the Zoom call raised their hands, and you could see, and he's like, oh, okay, fine. Because he's used to non-West Virginians advocating for things, but he will listen to West Virginians. And that's one of the pros about him, is that he will listen to people. Or he'll at least send an intern or someone to come find you. I'll give him that. Comparatively to Jim Justice, who doesn't even show up to anything or seem to care, Joe Manchin at least sent someone out to talk to you at some point. Now, returning phone calls is a hard problem. But so I won't hit him there at all. But when it comes down to representation, I don't know what happened. The man really much seemed to choose money over advocating for West Virginia and what's correct. And now it didn't surprise us when he chose not to run. My sources told me months and months ago that he wasn't going to run for re-election. So, like I said, I saw an opportunity here to, we need to run and advocate. And this is our opportunity to do it. And so now I didn't expect it. I didn't know when he was going to retire. I didn't know that date. So that did catch me by surprise. Mm-hmm. But we were thinking it was going to be sometime in December, but now he dropped it on November. So.
So yeah, when you decided to run, did you know he was going to retire?
No.
Or were you planning to run against him?
I plan on running against him. Mm-hmm. And then once I told a few people my plan, then one of my sources who knows him very well was like, oh, he's not running. He's not. I promise you he's not. So we're like, okay, that's fine. Well, we're going to run against him anyways in case he wants to. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, someone needs to. And if he doesn't, then we'll keep on moving forward. So we've had, you know, we had plan A and plan B in place the entire time for whatever happened. But I say we weren't shocked when he decided not to. So,
yeah, I feel like I was waiting for him to just do something. I didn't know what it was going to be, but I was like, okay, what's going to happen here? Like,
I mean, I don't think he'll run for president. I couldn't tell you what he's doing. I think he's trying to stay in the news and probably trying to build his own organization. I think with Mitt Romney now, I think they're hanging out. Well, I couldn't really tell you what he's doing right now about running for president. I don't know if he'd throw his hat in the ring for that or not. I don't think he would. Senator Manchin wants to win. So he'll pick what's best for him and how he can win. And running for president of the United States, I don't see that one happening. So we'll see.
That's a good point. That is a very good point. Well, I'm curious in terms of West Virginia, everyone looks at it as this like super red state. And what like something that drives both of us nuts is that Dems typically just ignore the red states. They're like, oh, it's a loss. Like, it is what it is. Like, it sucks, but we'll focus on these other, you know, battleground states or purplish areas and whatnot. And we feel like it's such a miss. Mm-hmm. If you're not engaging, like you can't win at all, and you never create sort of the mapping to do so in the future. And so I'm just curious, like, how you felt with that sort of mentality and running in a state that the Dems typically, minus Manchin, have written off.
Well, I'm very much trying to show that you shouldn't write us off. That's the one of the whole point of this campaign, is to show the Democratic Party that, hey, you know, there are fighters here. You can't just write off rural America. And like you said, the Democratic Party has vastly written off rural America. But frankly, and forever listens to this, that's bad tactics. You know, if you allow the Republicans to hold rural America to the point to where a Democrat can't even breathe here, what's going to happen to the Democrat strongholds that you do have? I mean, then the Republicans will now have power to keep encroaching on that, and you have to defend that. So the Democrats are putting themselves in a defensive posture. And like I said, you never see the Democratic Party ever really go on the offensive. And I'm trying to show that West Virginia, you know, I'm on the offensive. There's no defense here. It's all offense. We're making moves, and I'm moving quickly. And you know, I'm trying to, you know, it is kind of an experimental campaign. I'm not following the rule book here. I'm really doing my own ideas, my team's ideas, and see where we land. But right now, it's been very positive. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like we said. It's so frustrating too, because it's. Especially in a state like West Virginia, like we elected a Democratic senator, like there are pathways there. Like I think the same thing about like Kentucky, you know, that's like a statewide election. If they're electing a Democratic governor, like why aren't we looking into that? You know, there's so many opportunities to reach people, and you literally change lives at the end of the day. So yeah, but love this. Love your campaign. For people who live in West Virginia or outside of it, like how can people get involved with your campaign, continue to follow it, and help organize this?
If you people want to volunteer, they can go to my website, shrewsburyforsenate.com. I'm also on all social medias, X, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. So feel free to follow me on all those. And I'm also very readily available to talk to anybody. You know, people can just email the campaign, and usually it is me responding to you. So I do my best. I mean, there's a lot of people emailing.
Yeah.
But I do my best to respond the best I can. But yeah, if anyone wants to get involved, that's the best way. And end of the day, for the West Virginians who listen to this, is, you know, you have a choice between you can pick a working class guy who actively just wants to help people, actively is in your communities and understand your struggles, or you can pick the corrupt coal baron. Mm-hmm. So in the day, it comes down to, you want to choose the worker or you want to choose the company store.
Yes. I love that. And Have we talked to Tyler? Are we getting to surrogate on the campaign?
I would love for Tyler Childers to do anything. I don't know, breathe in the general direction of, of this campaign. We have a couple contacts for him. I'm not sure if they're real or not, but they were given to us. I have not tried to reach out yet because, I would like to craft a message around how to reach out to Tyler and get him more involved. Because politically, I think we're very much aligned.
Yes. I think he would love what you're building.
But we are actively, it's still in a building process to figure out how to get Tyler Childers to come to West Virginia for an event. But that'd be great. Absolutely.
Yes. We're going to clip this and tag him 10 million times and be like, excuse me.
That's fine. Honest to God, please do.
Yes, we will help you on this mission. And I just want to be invited to that GOTV concert. That's all I have.
I saw him at Healing Appalachia last year, and it was great. So
I saw him this year for the first time, too, and it was just incredible.
No, man's talented. He's very talented.
He's so good.
Yeah, feel free to get him out.
Yeah, this is going to be a group effort. We're going to get Tyler involved.
Absolutely. Nice. I appreciate it. Yeah. Hell yeah.
All right. Well, this has been wonderful. Tyler talk and all things in between. Thank you so much for joining us. And we can't wait to, see where this race goes.
And thank you all for having me on.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.